introduce Daniel V, or no, Desiree. Sorry, I was trying to jumble around. Sorry about that, Ms. Desiree.
Yes, I'm going first. My name is Desiree. I'm an addict. Okay, so a little nervous about being up here, but that's okay. It'll work out. I thought this was an ironic topic for my higher power to kind of pick through for me and throw my way, because I kind of struggled a lot with the second step and getting over a lot of things that the second step had to offer. And I started out my addiction pretty much when I was 16. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. So the God part of thing was kind of ingrained and taught to me that way. I spent time in and out of prison. I spent time in and out of jail. You know, I remember having those foxhole prayers while I was in jail. Please, God, somebody bail me out. Please, God, somebody get me out of this. If you get me out of this, I'll stop using. You know, all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of what my hang-up was when I got to that second step. I was tying it too much into religious part of things. And for me, that was kind of, it was very, very difficult to get over, and it took me a while. And when I first got into the program, I actually started out with a sponsor from another program that wasn't working out for me. So I worked my first three steps with that person, and then that didn't work out for me. So I switched over to an NA sponsor, worked my first three steps with that person again, and then I got my other sponsor and decided to do them again. So I guess I needed that in my life, because there were still some things in those first three steps that each time I had to rework them, I had were coming out. And those reservations that I had, they didn't come out that first time around that I worked them. So having a higher power and all that kind of stuff, and coming to believe that something could return me to sanity, was very, very hard for me to kind of get over. There are some things that I had to kind of look at. And what I like about the program is the power is to be loving, caring, and greater than ourselves. And, you know, in organized religion or in Catholicism, whatever I grew up with, it was the opposite of that. It was kind of judgmental. It was, you know, you got to go to confession, or you got to do this, you got to do that, or you're going to hell and all this and that. And it took me a while to kind of break free of that mentally and spiritually, you know, so I could have that higher power and the understanding of a higher power that would work for me. You know, I see the higher power aspect kind of manifest itself in my life a lot of times in very, very interesting ways and things that I don't even know. And for me, the higher power, I can see it in nature. I can see it in other people, especially people in the program. And I'm grateful for everybody here, and I'm grateful, you know, to be able to be up here and speak today. And it's hard to summarize everything that this program has done for me in a half an hour. Having my life and looking back at how unmanageable my life was during active addiction is kind of crazy. You know, I was coming up here with two people that I actually used to use with that are now in the program. And, you know, we're talking about some of the things that, you know, we didn't even remember that we did. And we're like, oh my gosh, this is like insane, some of the stuff that we used to do, from pulling up to somebody's driveway and going in there and robbing tools out of the shed or whatever it was, you know, to try to get money to come up, or things like that, and having chop shop in the garage and, you know, different things like that. And for me, mostly it was a mentally unmanageable part of it. It was, I didn't have an off switch. Every day was working on, every day, if I slept, let's put it that way, if I slept, it was going around and trying to figure out ways that I could find the ways and means to get more. I did a lot of selling when I was out there, and I couldn't turn my phone off. Everything was trying to manipulate people, because if you didn't have money to get what you needed from me, then, and you didn't have what I wanted, I would tell you what I wanted and manipulate that situation to get what I wanted out of that deal. And, you know, coming into things and seeing how chaotic my life was, how scattered my thoughts were, how I either was living in anxiety or depression half the time, because either I was depressed about the stuff that I didn't do, I was just depressed about not being there for my kids, I was depressed about not being in life the way I should be, not finishing school, not becoming a nurse, because I was in the second semester of a nursing program when I hit my big relapse again. And I lost all that. So if I sat in that too long, I'd end up in depression. if I thought about everything that I needed to do to get my life cleaned up and try to, you know, build the bridge or rebuild those bridges and stuff like that, I'd end up in anxiety. And coming into the program, I just, you know, I started realizing, and people would teach me just to be in the moment, just to live for today and to do what I could do for today. And that's taken a lot of that insanity out of my life just by doing that. And I'm able to turn things over to my higher power that I wasn't able to do when I was actively using. If something is kind of leading me into the anxiety, or I'm kind of worried about stuff, I can turn that over to my higher power and say, hey, you know what? I don't know how I'm going to handle this. I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, with your help, please just take it from me, and everything ends up working out the way it should. And, you know, the mental anxiety has kind of gone away. I have a huge meditation practice that has actually kept me a lot grounded and able to sit in my thoughts and feelings that I wasn't able to before. So, you know, if you're not into meditation, try it, please. It's a lifesaver, and I've been able to kind of, when my thoughts are all over the place, sit with them and be okay with them. And it doesn't matter what I'm going through. It doesn't matter, you know, what the outside world is bringing to me. If I can just sit for like 5-10 minutes, then I'm able to face things a heck of a lot easier. It says in the basic text, at some point we realized that we needed the help of some power greater than our addiction. Our understanding of a higher power is up to us. No one is going to decide that for us. So, I mean, if you ask me right now what my higher power is, I couldn't tell you a definite description of it, and that's okay. But I do believe that there's something outside of me acting to keep me clean today. There has to be, because I wouldn't be able to do this without it. And, you know, at the beginning, I didn't know how to really define that, and I struggled with that. Somebody said you can use a fellowship, and I think for a while I did use you guys. I did use this fellowship because it was bigger than me. It's worldwide. I see the power of this fellowship every day, you know, going on virtual meetings and meeting people, you know, all over the world. And that's one thing I'm grateful about for these virtual meetings, is it's shown me how big this fellowship is. It shows me that no matter where in the world I go, there's people that are like me. And some of the meetings that I go to, I can't understand what the heck they're saying. I don't know if anybody's been out there and gone to meetings outside the country and things like that, but I kind of drop in on them every now and then. And it's just a beautiful thing to see other people around the world. And for me, you know, early on in the recovery, like I said, the fellowship was a higher power for me at first, you know, and then I kind of started to change that. And for me, that thought, that concept of a higher power is ever changing, is ever evolving. That, you know, 3 weeks from now, my definition of a higher power, and it may be different than what it is this very second, and that's okay. I think it has to grow with me, and it has to change with me, because I'm constantly changing and I'm constantly growing. And that's the beautiful thing about this program, is that there's nobody can tell you what it is or who it is or what to believe in. It's up to us, you know, it's up to me to decide what my higher power is. And once I got over that initial, oh my gosh, the word God is in there. What am I going to do? I can't do it. I can't, you know, think about this and you know, because it would automatically turn to the religious aspect of it. But, you know, once I kind of got over that hurdle, and I'm kind of grateful, very grateful that I had to work those first 3 steps 3 times over, because it allowed me to kind of pull the layers of the onion off, I guess you can say, on it, and kind of zoom in on what I wanted for my higher power and what I needed it to be at the time and what I need it to be for me today. Basic text also says, as we learn to trust the power, we begin to overcome our fear of life. And that, you know, ties into my ability to self-sabotage everything that was going to happen. And before I came into recovery, that's what I would do. I would self-sabotage everything I did. And I think it was out of fear. That's what I believe today. It was out of fear. It was out of fear of success. It was out of fear of, what happens if I do this and I fail? I'm just going to sabotage it anyway, so I know I'm going to fail, and, you know, I have a reason to do what I was doing. But, you know, coming now, I'm able to kind of, like, again, just turn things over to that higher power and make sure that I have my higher power to bring me out of that fear. And I can, whenever I feel that fear coming into my life, all I need to do is say a quick prayer and say, here, take this from me, and everything kind of ends up working out. I know in early recovery, there's a lot of times where my higher power would manifest itself, and it was really, really during the times that I needed it. And they call them God shots, and it would happen to me all the time, whether it was through somebody else or, you know, things that kind of happening. I remember one time I was stressing over my rent, and I was working and all that kind of stuff, but I was still kind of a little bit behind and still trying to figure out how to live life and pay my bills at once, you know. Because in active addiction, I didn't care if I got evicted. I didn't care if I, you know, got thrown out of here and there. But when I was in early recovery and early on, I still didn't know how to quite manage my money. I was still learning how to do that. I was still learning how to make sure I had money to pay my bills and not go spend it on this and that. And I was running short on it. And I remember when I opened my bank account, this is kind of weird. I opened my bank account, and they said that when you open your bank account, you get $300. Okay, I had forgotten about that. So right when I needed it, the $300 hit my account. I'm like, where did this come from? And I had enough to pay my rent. But those kind of things, like, I didn't stress about it, though. Like, I would find myself falling back into that stress, like, how am I going to pay my rent? How am I going to do this? And I could find my brain going back to that insanity, saying, maybe I can go buy some of this. That way I can go sell it for this and then try to make this amount of money. And it was going down that path again, and I couldn't let it go down that path. You know, I was able to kind of stop those thoughts and say, no, I'm going to trust my higher power. It's going to work out. And it did. So whether people say it's a coincidence or not, I think that's my higher power kind of working in my life at that time when I needed it. But there's, you know, different things like that where that happens. And it makes my life and the insanity of my life a heck of a lot better. I still find my mind kind of goes to those routes. It still goes to tries to go back into the insanity. We'll get those thoughts every now and then. Hey, let's go pick up this. You got this amount of money. You can flip it for this. And for me, it's not exactly using that gets me. It's the thoughts of making money, because my lifestyle was part of it was that thrill seeking, the life in and of itself, and, you know, trying to make that money, that quick sale. And I had to find out that that was part of my addiction, because that was always a part that kind of drew me back into it, not just the substance. In the end, I was doing the substance to keep up with the lifestyle. And that lifestyle of insanity and adrenaline rushes and things like that is what I was feeding off of more than I was the actual substance. And, you know, trying to get away with things. And I didn't think I was doing big things, but evidently TPD, Tucson Police Department, thought otherwise, because my clean date is July 23rd, 2017, and that was the last night I got arrested. My boyfriend and I had a U-Haul, and they got us at one of the Fry's. They thought we had, like, this whole operation set up. It was Auto Theft Task Force. They had about seven cop cars at gunpoint, you know, telling us to get down on the ground. I still had that insane thought and looked at him like, let's run. That wasn't going to happen as soon as I saw the ghetto bird in the air. So that was the last time I used. That was the last time, you know, I picked up and all that kind of stuff was that night. And, you know, looking back at it, that was pretty insane, you know. It was like a moment on Cops that you see on there. But, you know, today I'm able to take that same experience that I had and, you know, put it into my service work. And H&I has been a blessing to me. I love going to H&I. I love helping out and doing service work there. And, you know, I can see these people in the same situation that I was in the treatment centers, either on probation, on drug court, and things like that. And, you know, I'm able to share the message of recovery and let them know that, hey, I know what you're going through, you know. And my higher power comes through there, too. You know, seeing the lights come on in their eyes and seeing other people, you know, realize that they can recover too. And even if they don't realize that they can recover at that time, at least it's planting the seed. And I recently got cleared to go back into Pima County Jail to share my story there, which is freaking amazing. And for once, I'm excited to go into jail. What the heck is wrong with that, man? But, you know, at least I don't have to walk around with matching bracelets or in orange, because orange is not a good color on me. It'll never be a good color on me. So, I mean, this program's been incredible, and each day I come to believe. Each day I wake up, my higher power can manifest itself in a way in my life that is amazing and awesome. You know, it goes from the bare basics of when I wake up My kids are there with me now. I'm not waking up in a trap house. I'm not waking up, you know, in a car parked on the side of the road because we couldn't find any place else to go for the night. I'm not waking up in a freaking tunnel, you know. I spent a lot of time living on the street, too, during that time period. And, my, you know, it's the population, honestly, that I love to work with in my job. I love to work with people that are in, the criminal justice system and that are without shelter. So, you know, but just waking up and having my kids there for me, coming running into me or whatever, trying to tell me to turn on the Wi-Fi early. I'm like, did you do your chores? No. Okay, well, you got to go do those first. But the, you know, it's different things like that. And I went from my mom not being giving me keys to the house. She took away the keys to her house a long time ago. She took those away from me because obviously, you know, there were some things that I may have pawned that were hers. Not a good situation, but she had taken the keys from the house away from me, and now I'm looking at buying that same house. And it hasn't been very long. I haven't been in recovery very long. I've only been in recovery for a little bit over 3 years. And I went from not being allowed in that house to having keys to the house, to having my kids back in my life. You know, that's the part that where I come to believe every single day that this program works. I come to believe that I do have a higher power that's working for me because I've tried so many times in the past to try to get clean and couldn't do it, you know. I try to move. I'm originally from Phoenix, and I moved down to Tucson thinking that I could relocate from it, and eventually my disease caught up to me. I thought I could, you know, just be social and drink, but eventually it led me down to that same path. And each time I went down that path, I would stop using I'd stop using my drug of choice, or I'd stop using this and that, and then by the end of it, I was there doing what I never thought I would do, which was a needle in my arm. So, you know, I went from this person that spent time in prison to IV drug user, you know, that sort of thing, to working with people in recovery, working with H&I, working with public relations, working, you know, people trusting me with stuff. I'm the treasurer of my home group. I'm like, they give me money. They trust me with the money. They trust me with the keys of the door. So for me, that's where the came to believe comes really, truly comes in, is the things that happen in my life day to day, the things that manifest in my life day to day that I'm truly grateful for, and I actually have all of you in the fellowship to thank. And with that, I'll pass.
All right, another round of applause. Thank you. And next we have Daniel B.
You stopped a little early, by the way. Hi, I'm Dan. I'm an addict. And first off, I want to thank the Nakona Convention for giving me this opportunity to share. I always carry paraphernalia with me. It's old habits die hard. And let's see here. Okay. So let's see. Again, thank you, Nakona Convention, for having me here. My clean date is 12/13/2001. And thanks. And it's been a great ride. That's all I can really tell you. And when it comes to coming to believe, Desiree had kind of mentioned it. It's a daily process. It's not like it was just when I did the second step. And so page 19 of my paraphernalia here says, we came to believe implies a process. For some, the process is simple and it may bring immediate results. Many of us arrived in NA so defeated we were willing to try anything. And so that was me in a nutshell. The funny thing is, though, is I arrived defeated and did not really realize it. And so coming to believe was this weird process for me because initially I never believed recovery was for me in the first place. I didn't plan on coming here. I didn't want to come here. I was basically like, you know, recovery's for quitters. I'm not a quitter. I'm having a good time, right? And I know I'm not probably the only one who felt that way. So needless to say, it took law enforcement to bring me here. And even then, I wasn't ready. However, it was a weird thing. And the first piece, I guess, of coming to believe for me was I got arrested. There's shock, right? And it's funny. So that was the last time I got arrested. It's not the last time I spent time in jail, but it's the last time I got arrested. So that particular time, so I'm sitting in jail just going, what the F? Really? Really? Here I am in jail once again, looking at more felonies, looking at, you know, it was the same ride. The same ride that probably a lot of you have taken, I definitely took, and it was like this, high, low, high, low, high, low, and it always wound up in jail. I got to where, you know, I always know when they talk about the ends for me haven't been death yet, but the ends for me usually wind up like this in the back of a car. And so I got arrested by this guy, and it was strange because I'm sitting there in jail, not really knowing, you know, what was up exactly this time. And I get a visitor, and I'm like, who the hell would be visiting? Well, it turned out to be that guy, the same person who arrested me. And I was like, what are you doing here? And what happened is that he offered me a deal, basically, and it was drug court. And so I'm going to take you down the rabbit hole a little bit with me on drug court. So I had been arrested several times prior to that, and they had talked to me about drug court. But unfortunately, I have this belief system that had to be purged. And the belief system was, and I'd been told by several people that, oh, drug court is just a thing. They want you to fail. They get you in drug court to get you on paper so you'll fail and they can send you to prison. It never dawned on me at the time, hell, if they want to send me to prison, why would they have to have a middleman, right? But, you know, I was high and I believed a lot of what I was being told. The fact was it was bullshit, but I believed it. And so I fell into this belief. And so this gentleman that arrested me comes in and visits me in jail, and he offers me drug court. And it basically, I was looking at some serious time in prison, or it was like going to be a year in drug court. And I'm like, really? You're serious? And I had to, at that moment in time, come to believe that this man was telling me the truth. So long before I ever did a second step, or long before I ever or got introduced to a God of my understanding, I had to start coming to believe. And so that was my first point of coming to believe. I was like, wow. So, you know, I've got to put my faith in something. So I'm going to put my faith in this gentleman, Mike, who arrested me, who is offering me a good deal. And I'm like, you know, I couldn't even comprehend that. I'm like, why would the guy who arrested me come offer me a good deal? You know? And so I went ahead and I said, oh, hell yes. Are you kidding me? Let's see. 5 years, 1 year. Prison, no prison. Yeah, I'm in. Where do I sign, right? So that was my first small step in coming to believe. And as I said, it was my last time being arrested, not my last time in jail, because of course with sentencing, you know, there was some time in jail and there was some time in a rehab and there was, you know, those kind of things. But in between that point and the point of me actually getting sentenced, I started using again. See, I wasn't ready and I wasn't done, and I had come to believe a tiny bit, but not enough to stop. And so I continued using right up until, let's see, my court was at 9:45, and I used up until 7 a.m. And so I went into court, and of course, same guys there that arrested me, his name's Mike, and he tells me, hey, go sit over there in the defendant's box. And I was like, wait, I'm not supposed to be a defendant. I'm supposed to just come in and report and be on my way. And they're like, no. You're going to have a sentencing, and you're going to spend some time in jail. And, you know, then we're going to send you to rehab, directly to rehab. No passing go in between or anything like that. And I was like, wait. Anyway, so then the next thing that happens is he says, hey, by the way, come on, we're going to take a UA right now. And I'm like, you know, at that point in time, I was screwed, bottom line, you know, and I actually thought I was fooling somebody, right? I thought, you know, he couldn't tell I was high. You know, I'd been using literally all freaking night long and all the last week and a half long or 2 weeks long. And you know, I thought I was fooling him, right? So I went in to take a UA, and of course I did the whole, man, I wish I'd have known I was taking a UA. I peed right before I came in here. wasn't the first time he's heard this, right? So you know, we're standing there. I'm kind of in this position. And he's, of course, got the water running and all the other things that go along with the UAs. I'm sure many of you probably know that, right? So, he's like, so, you know, the next thing we're going to do after I leave here is I'm going to go search your house. And I was like, oh, fuck. You know, I thought I was going to get away with something, right? So at that point in time, he's like, you know, so if I'm going to find something, I'd appreciate it if you tell me now, because if you're honest about this, maybe we can make this, you know, go away for you. If you're not, you know, it's going to max out anything that was happening before. You're not going to get into drug court. And I'm like, oh, man. So at that point in time, I actually had to come up with a tiny, well, I had to come to believe that the tiniest bit of honesty here would actually get me ahead. And I had to, again, believe in this man that he actually was going to, he was telling the truth. Right? So I went against every instinct in my body to admit something, right? And so I practiced this tiny fraction of honesty, because he said, so what, you know, I said, yeah, you're going to find something. And he's like, well, what are we going to find? I'm like, well, let's see. There's, you know, an ounce of weed here, and there's a, I told him it was an 8-ball. It was really a 1/4 ounce. And it was, there was a digital scale. And that's one of the things he had taken from me just a few weeks before that I was being sentenced for, because, you know, in Arizona with Prop 200, they pulled this whole thing of, we'll drop these charges and we'll get you on the charges where we don't have to send you to rehab, right? So, but by then, of course, I'd procured another scale and, you know, dope and all, you know what, you know how we do, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to, you know, I got somewhat honest, told him, you know, I kind of lied about the amount. And it was funny because there was a freaking scale right there. You know what I mean? It's like, hello. But anyway, that being said, so I went to jail, and, you know, I spent a couple months in jail and then 4 months in rehab. And during that time, I had an opportunity again to start to come to believe. See, at that point in time, I started feeling better. I found out even while I was in jail, the fact that, you know, I was eating and exercising and actually like taking care of myself, I actually felt better already. And so, you know, I was starting just the slightest process of coming to believe that maybe there was something to this, right? I hadn't been to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, hadn't been, you know, to any meetings of any sort at this point in time. I'm sitting in jail. But, you know, I also had this reservation. And this reservation was that when a year was up at drug court, everything was going to go back to normal. And so, you know, my connections were on board with that. Everybody was on board with that. It was just, that was how it was going to be. So, you know, I was going to lie my way, fake it till I make it kind of thing, and or not even fake it till I make it, just simply fake it, right? Fake it till I graduate or get out off paper, right? So I then wind up in this rehab, and that's when I started being exposed to meetings a little bit. And at that point in time, I was not convinced that this was for me. And it wasn't until I graduated, I hate that word, but rehab, you know, I left rehab, because I didn't graduate into anything. I graduated into, I'm back on the streets and hopefully I can get my shit together. So I got out of rehab, and literally the day I got out of rehab, I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And here's where coming to believe really happened for me. So I walked into this Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I walked in, and my friend Rodney was sitting there. And this man is now my sponsor today. But I had used with this man. I had my second felony was leaving his house. This was a guy I'd known for years out on the streets, and I'm not trying to tell his story, but we called him Skeletor. And, you know, so and so I walked into this meeting, and I see Rodney sitting there. He's about as far away from me as you are. And I all of a sudden, I had a hope shot. And right then and there, I came to believe, because if that guy could do it, maybe I can do it. And the truth is that, you know, I mean, it's not to say he was any worse than I was or I was any worse than he was. We're two using addicts, selling dope, doing our things, right? But I needed that moment of coming to believe to start me into believing that Narcotics Anonymous could actually help me, could help somebody like me actually improve my life, right? And so that was really, again, one of the pivotal coming to believe moments in my story. And so I went to that meeting. We got out of that meeting, and, you know, it was like my first meeting ever, and it was super cool. We all went to IHOP afterwards, and, it, you know, we ate and got to you know, socialize some. And that made such a difference to me at that point in time. And so, you know, we tend to think when we talk about coming to believe, you know, it's the second step, right? But, again, coming to believe is a process. And you know, like it says here, we came to believe implies a process. For some, the process is simple and it may bring immediate results. Many of us arrived in NA so defeated we were willing to try anything, right? So, as it said, it's a process. It's still a process today. And different things that I do today continue to help me come to believe. And so, as I was going along, obviously, I'm a big fan of working steps. So some people sometimes call me, you know, certain names, and you know, that's okay. I'm a big fan of working steps, and I'm kind of hardcore about it. And some people, I think, hesitate to be my sponsees because they know I'm going to twist their arm to do the steps, and that, you know, that's not the case. I'm not going to force anybody to do anything, but that's kind of the reputation I have because I'm just such a step Nazi. Please don't take offense to that word. But that being said, I started working the steps. And see, step one, I had to come to believe, because I had to come to believe that first off, all that step work might actually do something for me, and that I might be improved by it. But on top of that, I had to come to believe that I could somehow surrender. See, any of you that know me, which there's a few in here that do, know I'm about as stubborn as you can possibly be. And because I know literally everything about everything there is to know about everything, right? At least in my fucking mind. So it was hard. The word surrender didn't do anything for me that made me like excited or fuzzy or warm or any of those kind of things. And so I had to come to believe that you know what, this word surrender isn't going to kill me, that actually the thought of surrender isn't going to kill me, and that working this step isn't going to kill me. So I went with that, and it turned out working step one didn't kill me. And in fact, I like to use, you know, we talk about a fearless and thorough four step. So I like to use the word fearless and thorough with a first step because it's the foundational step. And it really took me having to work a fearless and thorough first step because, frankly, I was scared to death. You know, the truth is a lot of the problem with my addiction and what caused my addiction is that I grew up a scared little boy. You know, and it didn't matter how physically large I got or, you know, whether I acted imposing or aggressive or not, I was a scared little boy. And that's, you know, again, the bottom line way back where my addiction came from. See, I felt a lot more comfortable when I could use anything that would make my state of mind change. And so I was that guy in seventh grade. I was scared to death to ask a girl to dance. But, you know, I could go out and smoke something or drink something and come back in and have that slight bit of courage enough to be able to say, hey, you want to dance? So back to Narcotics Anonymous, right? I had to get honest and I had to get a little bit fearless in order to practice that surrender. And it says in our literature that the next step after surrender, after, you know, having a surrender in the first step, the logical conclusion is to have something to surrender to, right? So I had to come to believe, once again, in that there was something greater than me out there. And again, that was really difficult for me because as far as I was concerned, I was the shit, right? And that's actually not completely true either. So I'm going to expose myself here and get vulnerable. The truth is, my aggressive nature and my I'm the shit thing came because of my low self-esteem, okay? So it's a really easy thing to do when you suffer from low self-esteem to create a persona that doesn't. See, I felt if I acted aggressive enough and badass enough and confident enough that you wouldn't believe I was vulnerable and therefore I wouldn't get taken advantage of on the street, right? And that worked to some extent and it didn't work to some extent. You know, the truth is, on some levels, I'm a nice guy. On some levels, I was the predator selling you poison. Take your choice, you know? And it really depended on your perspective, which one I was at any given time, right? So at that point in time, I had to come to believe that there was something greater than me out there. And I had grown up in going to church and that kind of thing, and you know, I wanted as far away from that as possible. And I remember a point in time in jail, one of the times I was there, the jail was so full that they put us on a bunch of like cots in a big room, and they weren't exactly cots, but they were bolted to the floor, but it was more of a room like this, and there was, I don't know, 50 or 60 of us in there. And it so happened I wound up in a cot next to a guy I used to use with. And he was talking about something about praying. And I'm like, praying? What the hell is praying going to do for you? And he's like, dude, you know, blah, 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 something about God. And I'm like, Chad, why don't you just pray to me? I'm every bit as powerful as whoever you think you're going to pray to. And again, delusional here, delusional. And so, you know, and that's the thing, you know, my belief system today, that's a really bad thing to do. He literally was like trying to act like he was going to move his cot away from me because he's like, dude, lightning's going to strike you. And I'm just like, nothing's going to strike anything. You know, I'd gotten to the point that I didn't believe a God existed, which made it more difficult when it came to the second step for me to come to believe anything could be greater than myself, even though in reality, I was a person with low self-esteem and weak. However, I didn't want you to know that, right? So it was difficult for me to work the second step and to come to believe. However, I decided at that point in time that, you know, so far coming to believe has worked for me. You know, these few times prior to this that I came to believe in something, it's worked. So let's go with that. And I had no concept of a higher power particularly. And here's the deal, that one of the beautiful things about Narcotics Anonymous is your concept and my concept can be completely different and it doesn't matter. One thing though, I've heard some ridiculous things like, hey, pick a light bulb. Okay, I don't recommend a light bulb, okay? Because I don't see how a light bulb is more powerful than me. That being said, you know, a higher power is a concept. So I was like, you know what? Okay, I can adopt a concept, right? And you know, for a while, the meetings were my higher power and the group was my higher power because, again, I kept thinking of my friend Rodney and that first time walking in there and what a hope shot it was for me to see him sitting there clean and how impossible I believed that was. I could not the deepest depths of my imagination, I would have never believed that Rodney would be clean. And again, this isn't about him, this is about me, but that was such a big thing for me to believe. If he can do it, maybe I can do it. And so I had to, again, face that whole thing of coming to believe. And what I found is that every step along the way, I've had to come to believe. And on a daily basis, I have to come to believe. You know, when I wake up in the morning, some days, I've dreamt about something or I've stressed about something, and I have to then, you know, really come out of it in the morning and you know, I pray about it. But I have to come to believe that that prayer might be answered and that prayer might mean something. Because for me, I don't want to face the idea that there is nothing out there greater than myself. I think that would be a really sad experience for me. And what I found is that the more that I engage in that kind of thought process, the better things get for me. Well, you know, I don't believe in coincidences. However, coincidentally, when I have a conscious contact with the God of my understanding, life is better. life is easier. The other thing is that my belief that there is something greater than me out there that has power allows me to not have to try to carry it on my shoulders. See, I was convinced in my using days, and even when I first came in here, that, you know, I must have really big shoulders and I got to carry everything. And I'm the only one I can count on, and I'm the only one that can fix anything. And you know, I couldn't even fix me. What the hell else could I fix, right? Thankfully, however, I could fix machines. And so I had lost a really great career as a copier tech. And the weirdest thing happened as I came to believe in these different areas. Well, I came to believe that I was still good at what I did, and I was able to get a job. And not only was I able to get a job, but I was able to keep that job. And I've kept that job for over 18 years now. And I went from being the low man on the totem pole at my office to now I own that business. And so, and I don't say this to brag. It's just more headaches, trust me. But the deal is I say that to give hope, because I came in with no hope, no concept of a higher power, no belief that I could really make this other than based on if Rodney can do it, I can do it, right? And today I own a company. In fact, I own two companies and the corporation that runs them. And so it is what it is, but, you know, coming to believe is what got me there. Coming to believe is what got me here. Coming to believe is what keeps me clean on a daily basis. Because left to my own devices, I'd use. It's that simple. I would love to be one of those people who could actually use drugs successfully and not have it ruin their life. And I know people like that. I really do. You know, we were even talking about that on our trip up here. There are some people that I personally don't believe that they are addicts per se. I believe that they're heavy drug users. And I believed for many, many years that I was just a heavy drug user. I definitely wasn't an addict. I didn't have any addictive tendencies. And of course, this was all, again, delusional bullshit. But I had to look through that and see through that. I had to, again, come to believe that this was not coincidental, that every time I used drugs, I wound up in handcuffs. And it didn't always wind up in handcuffs right away. Sometimes it took months and months and months and months of use. And again, what that did for me was that made me believe the bullshit about I'm not an addict, right? See, look, it's been a whole year since I've been in jail. I'm freaking awesome, man. I've got this. And, you know, the truth is that was all delusional. It was sheer luck, if anything. What I will say about my higher power, though, is that every single time that I got rescued, it was always 2 or 3 hours before it would have been really freaking big. You know, if that guy Mike that I talked about in the first place would have come to my house 4 hours later that day, it would have been a lot longer sentence I'd been looking at, and I probably wouldn't have been able to get into drug court. And the time that I was leaving Rodney's house, again, had things gone the way I had planned them out, I would have been a lot worse trouble. Still felony. I mean, it's like I couldn't get arrested without getting a felony. It's just that I had a much more minor felony than what I could have had. And so when I look back at that, there's another reason that helps me come to believe that, see, my higher power has always had my back. And regardless of the stupidity that I displayed, my higher power always had my back. And regardless of the fact that I had completely rebuked the higher power, my higher power still had my back. When I think about those kind of things, again, they help me to come to believe and come to believe more. So that's part of the deal, is that today it's not just come to believe, it's continue to believe more, right? And so I have a belief that any addict can stay clean. And I have a belief that anybody who puts their heart in Narcotics Anonymous can get everything that I've gotten. And I've seen this belief come through. So I'm a big believer in evidence, right? And so whether you realize it or not, we all create evidence every minute of every day of who we are, what we are, how we think, how we act, the way that we interact, and so on. And so for me, I'm a big believer in evidence. And so the funny thing, though, is, you know, back in a not too distant past, I really believed I was pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. However, you know, I, and probably again like many of you, had the whole thing of where my family was like, hey, you have a problem. Once in a while, my friends, mostly my friends didn't say I had a problem because they had the same problem and none of us wanted to admit it. But, you know, the police said I had a problem. The judges said I had a problem. The probation department says I had a problem, and so on down the line. And you know, in my mind, I didn't have any problems. You guys all have a problem, right? Which is a classic case of denial on my part. And I was good at denial. I was very good at denial. And so, how much time do I have left? Do I have? Okay, good. I'm glad you flashed me up that thing so I know. No. So what I had to learn too is that, you know, moving on from the second step, but when we get to the 11th step, it's about creating a better relationship with the higher power of our understanding, right? And so what I had to figure out, and this took me a while, and I'm so glad that I worked the steps of Narcotics Anonymous several times, but see, I had to learn that to have a relationship, I couldn't just talk, I had to listen. And so that was a lot of my problem for a long time. You know, I'd pray, but I wouldn't listen. And I'd talk, and I wouldn't listen. And that's not a relationship. You know, I thought everybody was my friend, and I thought I was friends with everybody. I was such a freaking cool guy. You know, everybody loved Dan, and, you know, and plus I was Dan the man. So, of course, you know, I had lots of people like me whenever I had dope. But see, I had to learn what a relationship was. And I had to develop a relationship with my higher power. And I have to, on the daily, again, come to believe that that relationship can be made bigger and better by talking to and listening to my higher power. Okay? And since I'm at 5 minutes, I'm going to talk to you guys a little bit about the steps and with the relationship to coming to believe. And so in step one, it required me to come to believe that I had been living in insanity, and as a result, my life had become unmanageable, right? Step one. So step two, I'd come to believe that in order for the surrender of step one to work, I got to put this in a place that I can read because I wrote it down because I'll never remember this. There has to be something to surrender to. Step three, I had to come to believe that turning my will and life over to the care of my higher power would strengthen me. And you know, that is the time that I'd really needed the most strength. Because bottom line is I'm weak. And I'm left to my own devices. I'm weak. I'm weak-willed. And again, if I didn't have an absolute belief that I am not able to use, I'd use. So I had to come to believe that I am powerless over that. And that even today, although I'm not powerless, because guess what? Narcotics Anonymous took that excuse away. Okay. However, I have to keep reminding myself still and come to believe that drug use is not something I can get away with and that will enhance my life in any way. So step four, I had to come to believe that examining my past was not reliving my past and that it was the only way for me to come out of my denial. And so, you know, that's one of those things. I hear this so much about step four is, oh, my God. Oh, I don't want to relive that. No, I didn't relive anything. I wrote it down. I didn't even have to get put in handcuffs for my fourth step. So, you know, that says something. I didn't relive anything. I simply wrote it down. And step five, I had to come to believe that by sharing those things, I could let go of the past. And so, you know, thank God I found a sponsor and I worked the steps and I was able to share that stuff and get it off my chest. And guess what? I didn't relive it then either. So step six, I had to come to believe that my own personality was at least partly responsible for the things that have happened to me and that I had become ready to ask for my higher power help, for higher power's help. Because, you know, that was another thing. Here was another thing where, you know, I didn't think I had any character defects when I came in here. I really thought that everything I had was an asset, despite the pain that it has caused me through the years. So, you know, I had to come to believe that that would actually help. And that was difficult for me. And, you know, I had to let go of that denial. And step seven, I came to believe that my shortcomings could really be removed if I asked. Because here again, you know, as of step six, I figured I could fix those things. And that's not how our program works. Our program says we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, right? So step eight, I came to believe that I could help myself by becoming willing to give myself and others a chance to heal. So, you know, I love step eight and I love step nine. Step nine, really, because that's the action of it. But, you know, what I've found from my experience is that when I give somebody else a chance to heal from the pain that I caused them, and sometimes, you know what, they might throw shit at me or they might yell at me or say, you know, F you, Dan, I don't want to ever see you again. That's okay, because just that action on their part may have given them an opportunity to start to heal something that I did 20 freaking years ago, right? So I love that part of our program. I love that step eight required me to actually humble myself. See, that was another one of those things. Because of the persona that I had built and the fact that you know, I didn't want you to realize that I could be vulnerable or that I was vulnerable, the last thing in the world I ever wanted to be was humble in front of another human being and to, you know, practice that concept of humility at all. So step nine, I came to believe that I could practice humility by directly giving the people I just mentioned that healing. Step 10, I came to believe that I could prevent long-term damage by being quick to notice my wrongs and admitting my wrongs to others. And again, that is such a healing step for me and for them, because, you know, what it has caused for me is for me to be a little bit slower to jump into places where I've got to apologize, right? And then to be quicker about going ahead and apologizing if I'm wrong. And that's exactly the kind of thing I need, because, you know what, the last thing I want to do is cause wreckage for somebody else, and the last thing I want to do is cause wreckage for me. I know what happens when I cause wreckage, and again, I wind up like this in the back of a freaking police car. So step 11, I came to believe that by actively seeking a greater relationship with the God of my understanding, I could do a better job of carrying out his will in my life. And again, it's about that relationship. It's about trying to understand what God's will is for my life. And I can't do that without having a relationship with the God of my understanding and again, being active about the relationship and continuing to come to believe that it can be greater the more that I add to it. See, I can't make the God of my understanding greater. There's a lot of space for me to become greater. So, and then step 12, I came to believe that it was my job to carry the message to addicts and that I could serve as a good example to others as long as I practice the principles of the program. And so, you know, that's the other thing is I take step 12 as basically I signed a contract that said I, Dan, will carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And I take that seriously. I really believe it is my job to carry the message to addicts. And it is my job to help the still suffering addict. And it's my job to give a hand up when I can. And so I take that responsibility seriously. And I'm so grateful for this program, again, once again for this program, for giving me these responsibilities, giving me the responsibilities that allowed me to wind up buying my company. You know, I have the most amazing life today. And I have an amazing relationship, and I would have never succeeded in my relationship if it wasn't for this program. This program, so that same relationship that I was talking about with my higher power, say I have to practice that same thing with my wife, and I have to be able to actually listen to my wife also, not just kind of be like, all right, yeah, babe, oh, okay, yeah, I'm going to change that, yep, sure, I'll clean the garage, yep.
Just found his wife.
Right? Yeah. None of you could guess who my wife was, right? But so here's the deal. And granted, cleaning the garage is a process, but it's a process I've started. And hopefully by the end of winter, I'll have it done. So, and just so you know, see, I'm not perfect yet. Damn it. But But again, I take that job of being here for the Next Suffering Addict seriously. And I'm so grateful that you guys allowed me to spend or take up your time, because bottom line, your time is valuable. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to me rant. Thank you so much to the Nakona program. And I'm Dan, I'm an addict. Thank you.